For months, researchers and commentators have been sounding the alarm about TikTok, with some arguing the social media app is dangerously addictive for young users. Now, confidential documents revealed in a lawsuit earlier this month show TikTok executives knew about the harms and proceeded anyway. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me in this recorded interview to discuss what those documents revealed and what research has found about kids and TikTok are Kentucky Public Radio Capitol reporter Sylvia Goodman. Welcome back, Sylvia.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. And University of Pittsburgh Associate Professor of Psychology and Director of the Teen and Young Adult Lab, Sophia Chukas-Bradley. Thanks so much for being here, Sophia.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Sylvia, you were able to review documents in this lawsuit that was filed earlier this month. These documents were supposed to be kept secret. You found some shocking revelations, including that young teenagers were stripping on the app in exchange for payments. Tell us how you were able to see this information and some about what it revealed.
Sure. So, I mean, I was really just doing my regular due diligence as a daily reporter. The attorney general announced that he was going to file this lawsuit in conjunction with several other states around the country. And I was just looking at the publicly available document in the online court filing system. And I noticed that I'm sure reporters across the country noticed that there were large portions redacted. It's about 30 pages worth all told in this, you know, more than 100 page lawsuit. And I wish I could say that it was some amazing technical ability of mine, but really, I just tried the first thing that I always do when I see redactions, and I tried to highlight the text. And it was fully highlightable, and I copy and pasted it into a separate document. And that's how I read all of this information that has now been sealed by a judge, but I got it before it was sealed. And it basically shows a ton of internal communications, internal documents from TikTok, as the attorney general summarizes them and quotes them in this lawsuit, that show how TikTok viewed its own platform and its dangers to children, and also whether their safeguards were effective. And spoiler alert, their internal documents appear to show that many of them were not very effective.
Well, and one of these revelations, as I said, was about these young teenagers who were stripping on the app in exchange for payment. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so TikTok learned about this, it appears, after it launched an internal investigation, after a report actually from Forbes. So Forbes reported that kids were using some of these TikTok Live features to strip on the platform. And TikTok launched their own internal investigation and found that that was, yes, indeed true. Kids as young as 15 were stripping using the TikTok Live feature, and it was all fueled by adults who were paying for it using this digital currency. And they said that there was a, quote, high number of underage streamers who were doing this in exchange for the gifts and the coins.
Sylvia, your reporting also revealed this effort to prioritize people that were deemed attractive as opposed to those TikTok deemed unattractive. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was one of the perhaps oddest parts of this report, for as far as I'm concerned, is internally it was clear that TikTok knew that that some of these beauty filters they have on their platform are potentially dangerous to kids. But also in another internal report from the complaint, TikTok appeared to analyze its main video feed and they saw a, quote, high volume of what they called, quote, non-attractive subjects. And, you know, this is in a normal report that they did. And according to the lawsuit, Kentucky investigators found that TikTok then retooled its algorithm to specifically amplify users that the company deemed more beautiful to try and tamp down the high volume of, quote, non-attractive subjects.
Sophia, what kind of impact can that have on young people who are using TikTok?
First, I just want to say thank you to Sylvia for this important work of revealing this information. And unfortunately, what we're talking about here, the intersection of body image concerns, beauty standards, sexuality, and sexual behavior in the context of social media, we know from almost a decade of research now can have really harmful effects on adolescents' mental health, especially among adolescent girls. And I will note that it is difficult for psychology researchers such as myself to stay apace with rapidly changing social media apps and algorithms. So much of our work is on Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. Only in the past couple years have research findings been published from psychologists focused on TikTok specifically. But collectively, what this research shows us is that when adolescent girls are spending more time using social media sites in ways that focus on physical appearance. For example, the early research from TikTok suggests that watching videos related to the hashtag what I eat in a day or related to specific beauty trends, as well as creating content that self-objectifies or self-sexualizes. So for example, the stripping videos that we're hearing about right now from Sylvia and what she found, all of that has been linked to increased body image concerns, which in turn can predict worsening mental health. And a lot of this is driven by features of adolescence as a developmental period, which I can elaborate on.
Yeah, say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so during adolescence, kids are extremely sensitive to social rewards. What I mean by that is anything that is related to peers approving of one's behavior or adults, especially adults giving sexual attention, that is especially salient to adolescents. We have research from developmental neuroscience showing that kids' brains show a sensitive response to anything related to social media or offline that has to do with approval and feeling validated and valued by peers. And with adolescent girls, the most powerful source of validation and sense of status and feeling valued has to do with physical appearance. And that's because in our cultural context, adolescent girls and young women are socialized to feel that how they look is more important than anything else. And what TikTok has done that really concerns me as a psychologist is its algorithms in prioritizing more and more extreme content. And in now we know for the first time as of 2 weeks ago with this the release of this information, intentionally prioritizing showcasing attractive people on the For You page of the user experience. What is so damaging about this is that we know that when people are given this intense message about not only beauty being so important, but beauty being defined by a very narrow set of ideals, it's not surprising that in this era of social media, we're seeing a rapid increase in body image concerns, disordered eating, and even hospital admissions for eating disorders.
We're talking in this recorded interview about TikTok, its impact on kids, and confidential company information that was revealed in a lawsuit earlier this month. Sylvia, these documents that you were able to read in this lawsuit that were redacted, but you uncovered them essentially, what did they reveal about what TikTok executives knew and said to each other about potential harm the app can cause teenagers? I mean, this can come down to interfering with some basic functioning, right?
Yeah, I mean, the complaint quotes TikTok executives and employees talking very openly about the dangers they believe its platform has, including the formation of just some basic social skills. I think that the ones that TikTok executives pointed out were eye contact, walking around the room, engaging with other people, sleep patterns, eating habits, things like that, that it seems like TikTok employees, executives knew could be affected, could be impacted by, overuse of their platform. They also knew that they estimate about 260 videos to get addicted or to create a long-forming habit, a long-term habit to TikTok. And if anyone who here has used TikTok before, you know that the videos are pretty short. People tend to scroll through them very quickly, so you can watch 260 videos in less than an hour.
What's your reaction to that, Sophia? I mean, talk to us about this constant scrolling. You know, the term addictive is thrown around, and I don't know if that is exactly what's happening, but what is happening with this scrolling and this lack of face-to-face communication? What are the impacts that could have on teens who use this app?
There is debate in the field about whether we should be using the term addictive to describe some adolescents' experiences with TikTok and other social media platforms. I believe, based on my expertise as a clinical psychologist, as well as developmental researcher, that the word addictive is appropriate here. because these products have been intentionally engineered to hook and sustain our attention. And they have been designed in ways, for example, with the For You page, not allowing users to select their own preferences, but rather requiring that an algorithm determine those preferences based on a complex set of purchase data about the user. We know that these are design features that will not only hook the average adult user, but will be especially compelling to teen users, given the nature of brain development and social development during this period of life. And so it really concerns me when we have a product that is aimed at capturing adolescents' attention and holding that attention. When we combine that with incentives for adolescents to view and post their own increasingly objectifying and sexualizing content, it again is not surprising that we're seeing some mental health effects here. And I will note that the research findings are clearer about body image than about depressive symptoms and some of the other outcomes that have gotten more attention in broad public media and discourse. So we know about body image specifically that when researchers have designed carefully controlled experiments to test what happens when adolescent girls and young adult women are exposed to, for example, TikTok videos that have used a filter such as the bold glamour filter, viewing those images even briefly leads to an immediate decline in body satisfaction and an immediate increase in experiences related to body shame and self-objectification.
Sylvia, we've been talking about these, the information that you uncovered and all this research about TikTok allegedly addicting teens and the impact that the app can have on young users. But according to the lawsuit, this information that you revealed, the app is also looking for political influence. Tell us about that.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, I don't know that this was necessarily surprising. TikTok themselves said that this is standard practice in the industry, and maybe they're right. But yes, part of the attorney general's attempt to specifically tie the lawsuit to Kentucky, they mentioned the fact that TikTok had a specific strategy, a plan for how to convince important political figures in the U.S., specifically mentioned the lawsuit to Senator Mitch McConnell from Kentucky, of the value of TikTok. And they had a whole strategy for how to do that, including by pumping up local businesses that have potentially benefited from the app to those lawmakers. They mention a few in Kentucky. And it really just kind of gives an inside look at how TikTok, which is, you know, as we've mentioned before, has been quite embattled, has been under a lot of scrutiny, and, you know, obviously has faced plenty of legislative action, not just on the state level, but on the national level now. How they're trying to influence lawmakers of their value. And I also think it's worth noting here that there's also a lot of conversation within TikTok about how some of their safety features, which also the report alleges, the lawsuit, I should say, alleges they knew were ineffective, how they would use those safety measures to also prove to Congress, to politicians, to the public that the app is safe, even when they know that those safety measures are not actually, for example, decreasing screen time.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about those safety measures, because sure. TikTok, one of the arguments, public arguments, has been, oh, look, we've put these safety measures in place. But then this information that was redacted told a little bit of a different story. Explain that, Sylvia.
Sure. So TikTok has said in their statements in response to, you know, this article and others that they have voluntarily implemented several safety measures. You know, for example, if you scroll on the app for a long time, automatically after an hour for teens, it pops up like a notification that says you've been scrolling for an hour, you should stop scrolling, but you can easily override that. And in one internal experiment, the lawsuit says that TikTok found that tool to decrease screen time, for the teens that it used in this internal study, the amount of screen time that they did went from 108.5 minutes a day to
and 7 minutes a day. That's a 1.5 minute difference. And they continue to tout that tool and to roll it out, it would appear, and continue to talk about it as a safety measure for kids, knowing that it was ineffective. That's what the lawsuit is alleging. And unredacted complaints allege that the tools, though, are basically worthless. Like, for example, another one that shows these little videos as you scroll on your feed that says that, maybe you should take a break. The complaint has one executive saying that that tool is a quote, good talking point, but not altogether effective.
Sophia, what has research shown about social media safety measures? Has there been a lot of research into that and how these safety measures work or don't work?
That's a great question. There is not much research yet on the effectiveness of specific safety measures. There were some experiments to understand the effectiveness of applying warning labels to images that had been photoshopped to appear more attractive. And that research generally found that warning labels were not effective in reducing the negative effects on body image or mental health. I believe that the changes are going to need to be much broader than these little band-aids for the gaping wound we're looking at right now. I think when companies offer these small solutions that they internally have found are not going to be effective in addressing the problem, and then gain some public trust and can keep generating products that lead adolescents to use social media more often and for longer than they intended, at the expense of their other activities and sometimes their body image and mental health, that's not a great solution to this widespread problem we're facing.
Sylvia, you mentioned that it's not just these lawsuits that various state attorneys general have filed against TikTok. There's this national legislation, too. I mean, essentially a national ban of TikTok that the company is facing. Where does Senator Mitch McConnell stand on that, when it comes to a national TikTok ban?
Yeah, so Senator Mitch McConnell, that was a bipartisan effort. He was appeared to be strongly in favor. Now, that ban that you just mentioned, it goes into effect presumably in January, should it not divest from its parent company in China, ByteDance. Then the ban would go into effect. TikTok is fighting that in court. They're saying that's a free speech violation of its users. But Senator Mitch McConnell and, many others across the aisle have also been in favor of that legislation. Although that one was really focused on China's influence, right, on the app and how they could use that for either spying on American citizens or for spreading misinformation on the app. It wasn't really focused heavily on the harms to children like this lawsuit is. However, they have brought in TikTok and other executives of social media platforms to talk about the effect that their app has on kids. And I think it's worth mentioning here that, right, TikTok is not the only app, social media app by far that has been proven, or at least that researchers believe can have a very negative effect on children.
I think that's a good point. Sylvia, one of the things about TikTok, though, is we don't know a lot about the algorithm and how it works. What did these documents that you uncovered, what did it say about the company's efforts to keep users on the platform?
Sure. So essentially, TikTok described themselves as in an arms race for attention. So, and with other social media apps, with everything else going on in the world, the idea is to capture users and to keep them on the platform as long as possible. I don't know that I can speak really specifically to the algorithm. There were some interesting details in these redacted documents, but we haven't reported on them heavily at the moment. But essentially, I mean, we already know that TikTok is quite ubiquitous in the US. A presentation shown to top company officials revealed that an estimated 95% of smartphone users under 17 use TikTok at least once a month. And the company, based on that number, they said they've basically hit a ceiling among young users. That really shows how ubiquitous it is. And so really the idea is that they're just continuing to keep kids and young adults and other people on the platform for longer. Of course, TikTok's response is we've put out these safety measures that encourage kids to step away from the platform from time to time. But at the end of the day, right, when you're a company like TikTok or any social media company, the currency that you have as a company, how you make money is by keeping people on your platform.
And Sylvia, you've mentioned that TikTok's response has been, hey, we have these safety measures in place. When it comes to the political stuff that we talked about, this is common practice in the industry. Mm-hmm. What else, if anything, has TikTok said about these revelations and really just about the fact that you were able to see these redacted documents? Is there more the company has said about that?
Yeah, TikTok objected to our reporting of these documents. They said it was irresponsible of us to publish documents that were later sealed. I should note again, I got these documents publicly before they were sealed. I am not a party, obviously, to the confidentiality agreement that the Attorney General signed with TikTok in order to get these documents and under which they redacted them. And but they objected to our reporting of them. A spokesperson also told us that the Attorney General's complaint cherry-picked misleading quotes and that it used outdated and out-of-context documents and that it misrepresents TikTok's commitment to community safety. And I do think it's worth keeping in mind that all of this information that I'm sharing, that I'm talking about, is in a lawsuit against TikTok, right? It's painting a picture of the wrongdoings that the Attorney General is trying to prove against TikTok. And so that's definitely worth keeping in mind here.
Sophia, one of the things that seems so complicated about TikTok and these other social media apps is that there are some young people who find help through those apps. They find communities. I mean, there are positive impacts these apps can have on young people's lives, too. How much does that complicate this question of, you know, the impact of these apps and what TikTok and these other apps mean for teens?
That is one of the most important and complex questions right now. We know that adolescents do report many benefits from social media, and adolescent girls and youth of color and LGBTQ+ teens report both more negative experiences than their peers with social media and more positive experiences. For example, this was reported in a recent report, first authored by Jacqueline Nisi and by Common Sense Media. We know that social media can provide, for example, really important forms of social connection, information about mental health resources, and access to communities that would not otherwise be available. However, I really think the question at this point is, at what cost? And when we have a product that is intentionally designed to show adolescents increasingly extreme content in order to keep them online longer, is that the product, is that the medium through which we want adolescents to be searching for health information? Right now, I am teaching a class specifically about social media and body image to undergraduate students at the University of Pittsburgh. And when students share with me examples of what they see on their For You pages, the vast majority of the content is what I would consider to be harmful content from the perspective of body image and mental health. Students can search actively for the more positive content, but the algorithm may still provide them with the more extreme, more negative, misinformation-focused content. And that is ultimately what concerns me most about the app and why I don't think its overall impact is positive for teens.
So, Sophia, what's your advice for parents and even for teens and other young people who are who really want to use TikTok safely? You know, is there a way to use it safely, or should we even be using it at all?
I don't think it's realistic at this point for most adolescents to quit TikTok altogether because they feel it is so ingrained in their daily lives. I did personally quit all highly visual social media, such as Facebook, when I was in my early 20s, over 10 years ago, and I never joined TikTok myself. It is possible to avoid it. But for adolescents, where this is their primary form of social interaction, that's a tall order. And when recommendations are made for parents to band together and encourage their kids not to use social media, I will point out that adolescents have always found ways to engage in behaviors they're not allowed to engage in, such as drinking and having sex, when parents say, just don't do this. So I think we need other solutions. And I think these solutions are going to be found offline through encouraging more time spent away from one's phone altogether, not trying to use apps to regulate how much time we spend on other apps or tinkering with really specific design features, but shifting time away from our phones, because we know that the things that lead to a life well lived, the most meaningful, joy-filled type of life, have to do with mindful presence and connection to something bigger than oneself. And when an app is encouraging people to focus just on their own image or fake AI-generated filtered images of peers and strangers, that's not going to contribute to a life well lived.
Well, I've been talking with Kentucky Public Radio Capitol reporter Sylvia Goodman and University of Pittsburgh Associate Professor of Psychology and Director of the Teen and Young Adult Lab, Sophia Chukas-Bradley. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Up next, can design help address health disparities in urban and rural communities? This is Cincinnati Edition.